You're the breadwinner.
That's the sweetest thing you've ever said to me. I hope I hope the microphone picked it up. We should leave it. Let's see.
Keeping my head above water is all that I know how to do. But it's kind of beautiful underneath it all.
I was going to begin this episode with one of my stupid-ass tweets about how it's, like, insulting when you're taking a selfie with somebody and some, like, a stranger walks up and offers to take a photo.
You know? It's true.
You're like, what, was it a bad angle? Like, what's wrong? But I think we would be remiss if we didn't share that tweet that you just showed me.
Oh. I feel like it's very niche. You have to have seen the movie.
Okay,
you know?
But it's niche, so if you don't get this joke, you have to go and immediately watch this movie. It was on Mary's list of her favorite movies. And I think it was like in your top two or three.
Yeah, still.
It's Portrait of a Lady on Fire. If you haven't seen it, you're not going to get this joke. And you're not going to have seen one of Mary's favorite movies. And I might kick you out. I'm sorry to say it. I might.
Kick you out.
Okay, read the tweet.
The tweet is from Ariel Dumas. Ariel Dumas. God damn it. I don't know. They said, ugh, karaoke never has the one song I want! ! In parentheses, the spooky a cappella witch campfire song from Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
It's so good!
Oh, it's good.
Okay. You know what? That might have been more for us than for anybody else.
I think it was more for us.
If I looked at how much interaction that tweet had, it actually made me realize how niche this is. It had like one retweet. That's like one of my tweets do numbers like that. And I don't have a blue check mark. I'm just saying. Okay, everybody, welcome.
Welcome to
abortion episode. Is that what you were saying?
Yes. If you can't laugh at abortion, then you can't love me at my best.
Oh, my God.
You know?
I think you're actually really onto something. The tragic framing around abortion is something totally manufactured by opponents of abortion.
Yes!
And, like, I know that a lot of your activist friends and people that you know have really, like, towed this line. Like, who was it that did shout your abortion?
Yeah, Amelia Bonnow, and I think that's how you say her name, and Lindy West.
And that, I think, is motivated by that same, like, let's bring this out of the shadows. Like,
yeah.
Let's talk about this, and let's not talk about it as, like, one of life's great tragedies, but instead just, like...
A medical procedure.
A medical procedure that women need to have access to, right? That people who have ovaries and uteruses need to have access to, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Lighthearted start to the evening. We just got done eating sog paneer, and it is sitting very heavy in my stomach right now.
It's delicious, honey.
But you know what? Let's do it. Let's start telling some lies at the beginning of episode 66.
Ugh! 66!
Patreon.com/manic episodes if you'd like your very own lies. And if you don't, what the fuck?
What the fuck is wrong?
What? do you want to start?
No.
Okay, I'll start. Daphna won the award. Daphna, I'm sorry. Mary just totally interrupted your name. That was so rude.
Jesus Christ,
I don't want to have to apologize for my partner,
but... Oh my God, this is too much.
Daphna won the award for the world's cutest cuticles.
Aw, cuties, cuticles.
Cutie.
That's really cute. Quinn has started an immersive cookie experience with the local Keebler elves.
Local?
Yeah, the local
elves. They live right underground, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, don't get too comfortable.
The sewer.
The Keebler elves are unionizing.
Oh, my God.
No longer will they work in harsh conditions in trees without windows. Quinn and the elves will walk you through the life of a Keebler elf. You may think you know, but you have no idea.
Workers of the world of all sizes and shapes, unite.
Unite.
You have nothing to lose but your chains.
Yes.
That is absolutely appropriate because Labor Day was just this past.
Yes.
Couple of days ago.
Yes.
Sean University and I.
Do you know when I sent you Sean's name, I was like, I will never forget Sean University. Every time I see Sean's name, I'm like,
and it delights
Sean
me.
University.
Sean University and I crossed to Delaware last week. Sean Yu, sorry. It was during the American Revolutionary War, right before the Battle of Trenton. And it was the day after Christmas, actually, 1776. And we were both leading a column of Continental Army troops across the icy Delaware River in a logistically challenging operation.
Okay, which one of you is George Washington?
You know what this just reminded me of? That's the new lesbian question. Which one of you is George Washington? Which one of you is the icy Delaware?
I'm the ocean. Wait, the Delaware isn't the ocean.
Okay. I definitely copied and pasted that of like entire thing directly from Wikipedia. And it made me think of my one of my students. So I'm teaching in like a dual enrollment class right now. So I have a lot of high school juniors. And I was asking them about their expectations of what college professors expect and what college writing is like. And one of my students said that one expectation was that there's little to no plagiarism.
Just a kiss.
Just like a zest.
Yeah.
Yeah, a twist of plagiarism.
Just like a pairing of words.
And that one student who said, no doodles on the side of the paper. I was like, oh, no, sweetie, don't stop doodling.
Always doodle.
Don't let college take that from you. Remember what they took from you.
I'll take that.
Oh.
Daniel L. invented a kaleidoscoping finger grabber to steal other people's french fries when they're not looking.
What is a finger grabber? Makes it sound like it grabs fingers. Maybe it does if it grabs french fries.
Yeah.
It
also grabs fingers. Finger grabbing size.
Do you remember that hoax?
It's so it can hold a baby's finger. So you don't have to.
There's two. It is so exhausting to have to hold the baby's finger. do you remember that hoax, the Wendy's chili thing?
No. Oh, the finger in the chili. Yes.
And I think that ended up not being true. Somebody needs to make a documentary about that.
I would love to see that.
And no, you know what?
What?
I'll do it.
Okay, honey.
I'd love to do
that. Just add it to your list.
Mel invented a reverse bowling game in which you throw pins at a bunch of balls to try to get them to roll back down the lane and onto people's fingers. Speaking of fingers, sorry, it's so stupid.
You didn't use the kaleidoscoping finger grabber for the backwards bowling.
I don't have to pay you royalties.
Sag paneer? More like spank paneer. Emily,
what?
Launching a kinky dining experience.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, honey. Oh, this was really ill-advised.
There will be cheese.
Kinky?
There will be spinach. There will be blindfold.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry.
No, I'm
so sorry.
Hold your head up loud and proud, you weirdo. I cheered Taryn on as she operated the Large Hadron Collider.
Oh!
That is a particle accelerator that pushes protons to near the speed of light. Or ions, really. It consists of a 27-kilometer ring of superconducting magnets. This is also just copied and pasted. Just the right amount of... Just a little plagiarism. Anyway. Superconducting magnets with a number of accelerating structures that boost the energy of the particles along the way.
Oh my God, Taryn! God.
And I just stood on the side and I was like, go, Taryn, go.
Love it. So thankful to Rebecca B, who dropped by with a fresh baked loaf of sourdough bread.
Oh, yum. I know what inspired that.
Craving that chewy sourdough. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca really came through.
Rebecca, from my tum tum to yours, thank you.
To your tum tum.
I guess that doesn't make any sense. I came up with this one while I was driving, and I used the talk to text thing to like transcribe it, and I had to correct it earlier. It was all fucked up, but anyway, I was laughing so hard I just forget it. What? Okay, I had a huge rat's nest in my hair last week.
Oh no!
I don't know how it happened or how I didn't notice because my hair is so short. But they built a nest. They had babies. They really set up shop in my mop. But Allison had the courage to tell me, which couldn't have been easy. Because it's like when somebody has something in their teeth, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want to draw attention to it.
You don't want
to. But I'm so grateful. A rat's nest is also like when you have a tangle in your hair,
yes,
right?
Okay. Yes. You don't want to embarrass them.
That was really... The tangle was really like the fulcrum on which all the rest of the joke...
Yes. Okay. I understood the hinge and it worked. It really worked.
Okay. Thank you, honey. Just get it over with. What's the next
Jesus
thing?
Jesus Christ.
What do we do next?
Hoo-hoo. Hoo-hoo.
Who's there?
Who are you?
Hannah is building a fleet of robotic owls to perch outside of your house.
I love this.
It's a new security system that blows Ring doorbells out of the water. Or should I say, it's the new security system that really turns heads.
You really did it. Bow, 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 bow. You did it. You outdid the hair on joke. You really, I don't even know what to say. Oh, you know, I wish I was one of those people who could just do puns, like, just fire them off.
Oh, my God. I think it's magic.
It's brilliant.
It's amazing.
Didn't you say you knew somebody who could do it really Soren. Well?
Oh, I Soren love. Soren and Soren's family, and, like, I went over there for dinner once, and it was, like, I didn't want to say anything, because they were just, like, bing, 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 bing,
you're like,
bing.
I'm going to ruin it.
I was, like, trying to join in, and it was just not fast.
Like, I was trying to go, it was, like, sort through in my brain. I was, like, Alpun. I literally can't do it.
It's amazing. Like, at one point, it was just, like, they were talking, and I asked them a question, and I was, like, so, you know, like, how did you, you know, start on your, you know, sort of career path? And they're, like, oh, you know, we both went to school, and then we became a paradox.
Oh my God.
Paradox. They were both doctors.
Paradox. That's almost too much.
Amazing. It was amazing.
It's almost too much. And me, little me sitting over here, I'm about to create a large hadron collider in my head because I'm so dense. Do you get it? Oh, I guess that's more of a black hole joke. I don't know science well enough to make
it. I don't know anything well.
Okay, do you want to get started with our discussion?
Yes.
All right, go for it.
There's just so much to talk about.
Be a great justice.
Honey, oh my God. What the hell is wrong with you?
I'm so sorry.
The fuck?
I had an article pulled up about the codename Jane, which is a clandestine group that before Roe versus Wade helped women find abortion services. And for some reason, a video of Brett Kavanaugh just started playing on the website. Oh, I'm really Jesus. Sorry about that.
Oh, Jesus, Brett Kavanaugh. More like poop Kavanaugh. Am I right?
more like talent have a knot, Kavanaugh.
There you go, babe. That was pretty good.
Thank you, honey. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, obviously with the ruling in Texas, it sets up a really scary precedent for basically the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
I think it is really foolish to think that a wave of legislation similar to this is not going to be coming in.
I mean, this is the opening in the door, I think, that anti-abortion activists have sought all along.
Yes.
I mean, the Supreme Court ruling,
yes.
It really is right. I mean, I think you're right. I think it would be foolish for us not to prepare for that.
Right. Yeah. And so it's just been on my mind so much. And I think there are a lot of anti-abortion activists that are really trying to draw this parallel between this and mask mandates.
Right.
And it is so incredibly infuriating.
Right.
That's where we're going to talk about My Body, My Choice.
Right. I mean, and I was thinking about this too, because you, like the other night I woke up to go to work and you hadn't slept much. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about it and I was like, this is why already this affects people all over the country in such dramatic ways. Mm. So I don't mean to say that the effect is worse for any one particular person, but like, I think this kind of stuff is just a whole different minefield for people who have mental illness, because it led you to like, you kind of obsessed over it.
I mean, that was also the night of the flooding. And
oh, right.
Like,
yeah.
Just, it felt like a very especially apocalyptic night.
Right.
And I was, you know, doom scrolling as we're wont to do, but it was like the ruling had just happened and this like incredible, awful amount of flooding was happening. And once again, our basement has leaked again. So it's like,
it's on our minds.
Yeah. I was just like, oh my God, our house is going to get washed away.
Right.
So I was like getting really upset. And I was like halfway through scrolling through Twitter, I was just starting to sob. Like, I was just like thinking about the impact and the effect that this has on people. And when we pretend that policies don't like actually have a tangible impact on people's everyday lives.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Yes.
You know, when we think that politics is just this sort of like, you know, thing that doesn't affect us.
Yep.
And I also, I get so angry when I think about this sort of selective empathy that conservatives have around abortion.
Right.
That there's this invention of life and this protection of something that doesn't exist, something that's invented or right. something that it can be like philosophically debated. But this idea that you don't empathize with the person that is in the situation
right.
of deciding whether or not they're going to keep a baby.
Right.
Or deciding whether or not they're going to have a baby or like, yep. you know, like grow a living thing in their body. Like,
right.
and sign up for all of the things that that entails. But you have empathy for something that isn't.
That is, absolutely.
That is debatable, right? Like,
sure.
there's a debate about when human life starts.
Yes. I mean, you know? Absolutely, yes. And then I think that's a conversation. The ethical conversation makes sense. The conversation, the controversy, that like, all of that makes sense to me to a certain extent, I guess. But at the same time, there is a history to the birth of abortion as a political issue. Mm-hmm. Like, abortion did not emerge naturally in this country or organically as a political issue that divided people along partisan lines. Mm. That is absolutely an invention of the 1970s.
Wow.
When Richard Nixon, you know, who was, of course, a Republican candidate for president, was trying to appeal to socially conservative voters, mm-hmm. some of his strategists told him that abortion would be a really good way to appeal to Catholic people, mm-hmm. to socially conservative voters, mm-hmm. who might not otherwise vote Republican, who, of course, had come to be like super loyal to Democrat politicians, like people like John F. Kennedy. And so it was invented as a wedge issue, as this kind of stuff so often is. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of how later, you know, Karl Rove, Bush's strategist, would say guns, God, and gays. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just the way that we appeal to these voters. It was like, it was absolutely manufactured as a politically divisive issue.
Right.
And now, I think to some extent, people on both sides of the political aisle are guilty of this, but it's like this thought-terminating cliche where it's like you just accept the position that seems to adhere with your value system without really thinking about, like you said, the actual lives that are in the balance.
Yeah.
Like what it means for a woman to be in a position where she can't access, or a person who gets pregnant to not be able to access reproductive care, like right. what that's like.
Right.
And in fact, you, when you mentioned the like bigger shifts in policy, I saw this map of Texas, and it was showing like the paths from Texas to a place where abortion services can be accessed, like in, you know, the maps, the driving maps.
Yeah.
And like half of them were in this shaded red area where women or people, you know, people seeking reproductive services might be subject to like random searches by like immigration officials.
God.
So if you think about that as like a Venn diagram of policy issues,
but
yeah, it's like, this is, was there some like grassroots organizing by people who are like legitimately concerned about abortion as a political issue or as an issue? Sure. But then I think like since Roe versus Wade, it's definitely been something that has been intentionally exploited and mm-hmm. lied about and mm-hmm. misrepresented in order to, you know, consolidate political power.
Right. I think it's also important that we establish some facts, because I think what happens with abortion is that it feels to conservatives very, very charged
yes.
with like, there's this sort of really visceral graphic images and videos and this idea of what abortion is. But I think it's really important to note, like 92% of abortions occur within 13 weeks of a fertilized egg.
Mm-hmm.
Only what they obsess over is this 1% of abortions that happen at or after 21 weeks.
Right.
I want to say too, that like,
I don't know if I would personally ever have an abortion. I don't know. I've never had one. I don't know if I would have one. I probably would have had one years ago if that had happened to me. But like, just because I don't personally, like, I wouldn't personally do it doesn't mean I have the, you know, I'm going to advocate for other people not doing it. That's a, that is a my own personal, like, belief. Like, this is just, it's absurd.
I think there are a lot of people who have, for a variety of reasons. I mean, potentially our own president might fit into this category. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally sure, so don't quote me on that. I don't really know if I know, like, the nuances of Biden's position on it. But, like, Biden's Catholic. Catholic doctrine is very specifically and vehemently opposed to abortion in general. Mm-hmm. But I know that I've known a lot of people who are, like, individually, you know, for, like, moral reasons, sort of opposed to the idea or wouldn't get an abortion or, you know, whatever, but who still think that there's a distinction between that and what should be legislated.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Because absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and I also want to clarify, like, there are two reasons why people get abortions that late. The most prevalent reason being they couldn't get an abortion earlier.
Right.
Which means that it's if you make it more difficult to have abortions, then the likelihood of people having later pregnancy abortions is going to increase.
Right.
You know? So, like, and the other thing is that if it's medically necessary, and it means that person that intended to give birth could die or be seriously harmed through the pregnancy process.
Yep.
If someone was diagnosed with cancer while they were pregnant or developed preeclampsia, medically necessary also means necessary for the fetus. In some cases of pregnancy, a baby develops what they will call lethal fetal anomalies, that the fetus will die before birth or shortly after. Mm-hmm. And they can't detect lethal fetal anomalies until the 20-week mark. This is causing so much more pain and suffering to the issue. Like, if they were really going to go after it, then it should be federally it should be federally fought after, but it's not going to win federally.
Right.
But all it does is make the situation more harrowed and, like, more terrifying for the person who's pregnant.
Absolutely. Especially when, speaking of terrifying, especially when there are, like, potential, like, fucking bounties on the heads of people who can get, like, that's something that is happening in Texas, right? Yes. There's, like, rewards offered for, like, help. I mean, and this is something I remember when Trump was a presidential candidate back in 2016, he was really squirrely about it, but somebody asked him, they were like, so you said that you would want to punish, you think that women who get abortions should be punished, like abortion should be banned. And if abortion is banned, then that must mean there should be some punishment for women who get abortions. What do you think that should be? He's like, oh, well, I mean, of course, like, it's not like anything he says is coherent anyway, but he was really squirrely about it. And he kind of avoided the question and was like, I just know that it's a really serious issue. And I remember thinking, I was like, no, really, spit it out. Like, if this is what you're advocating for, what do you think? Yeah. What are you going to throw people in jail? Like, totally. What do you believe should be the punishment?
Yeah.
And I mean, how do you punish someone for seeking and receiving medical care?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it kind of reminded me, so there's a desire, I think, to police poor people's bodies more than wealthy people, right? We, for some reason, maybe we're scared of losing control. We, like, resent poor people for not having control. I don't know what it is, but I was thinking about reading that book, Just Mercy, by Bryan Stevenson, you know, about the criminal justice system and the death penalty. And there's a chapter where he just talks about women who have ended up, like, serving prison sentences for, like, miscarriages. Like, one, and these are women who have since been exonerated, but still,
God,
you know, I think it's just, like, we police the bodies of poor people and just already marginalized people. I you know, I thought about it. I was like, I think that for people, the idea of, like, a poor person having access to abortion or reproductive care is, like, somehow inherently more offensive than a wealthy person getting, you know what I mean? Like, there's something really controlling and classist about it, you know? And, like, people want to be able to dictate what kind of care people get. And I know
there have been lots of politicians who have called for overturning that Hyde Amendment, which the Hyde Amendment prevents abortions getting any kind of federal funding.
Yeah.
And that, to me, comes from that same place of like, well, you can do whatever, you know, you can do whatever you want, but I'm not going to pay for it, you know, right. That sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, I said something on Twitter. I can't really remember what it was. Like, unwanted pregnancies without access to abortion become unwanted babies.
Right.
And, like, unwanted children.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. I think that this argument would be much more compelling if we had really comprehensive welfare.
Yeah.
If we had if we had free childcare.
Yep.
If we had like incredible, stellar healthcare.
Right. If we had fucking Sweden.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Then this would be a more compelling argument, right. You know, than it would be like, I don't know. You still can't like tell people what to fucking do with their bodies. Yeah. And like the idea that you would force someone to go through labor, like, fuck you. Oh, fuck off.
Absolutely.
Fuck off so hard.
Yep. Yep.
And like, also that this is an experience that only 50% of the population is going to has the potential to experience. So like, it's just, as is every argument with like somebody who doesn't have the direct experience, you have to be able to listen and trust people at their word.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And, you know, I, as you were talking, I was thinking about this, like, there, I know that this is a common line of reasoning. And I talked about this when we did our previous episode about reproductive justice. I know that this is a common sort of talking point among people who are pro-choice and who advocate for reproductive access for people, but, people are going to figure out how to do this no matter what.
Like, exactly.
From the beginning of time.
Yes.
If there have not been services available, people who are pregnant will figure out how to make it happen. Like,
yes.
They absolutely will find some way of getting an abortion somewhere.
Absolutely. Like, that's why this is framed as medically necessary care. Like, this is so, it's something that people are going to need. They do need, they have needed, and they will need.
Right.
And like, also the ruling that says, what is the length of time? Is it like 9 weeks or something?
In Texas,
insane. Yeah.
6 weeks.
Six weeks.
Is it six? Hold on. Let me see.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. It's six.
I thought
there was no way I was remembering that correctly. Cause I was like, you're right. Six is absolutely banana land, but yeah, six.
I just think like,
oh, and it does not include exemptions. This is actually where the Texas law departs dramatically from public opinion is that, and I think all of this, by the way, it, like the media bears a lot of responsibility in my mind for the fact that this continues to be as partisan an issue as it is, because I think the media has done such a consistently shitty job of framing this issue. I think it re-entrenches it as a partisan issue every fucking time it comes up. But anyway, the vast majority of people who oppose abortion approve of, God, I just get so annoyed talking about the, like they're being generous or something.
Right.
An exemption for victims of rape and incest.
Right.
The Texas law does not.
It's insane.
So it actually parts pretty significantly. It's really extreme. I think it's the most extreme set of regulations since Roe versus Wade. I mean,
right.
it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
And did you hear that the governor on Tuesday said that, you know, well, it's okay that it doesn't have an exemption for rape because our plan is to eliminate rape in Texas?
Oh, I'm gonna, that made me like nauseous.
He said, are you okay with hearing this?
Yeah.
Rape is a crime and Texas will, no shit, Sherlock. And Texas will work tirelessly to make sure we eliminate all rapists from the streets of Texas by aggressively going out and arresting them and prosecuting, okay, fucking Yosemite Sam, and prosecuting them and getting them off the streets.
Oh my God.
And if we can't prosecute the rapists, we'll just prosecute the abortion havers. So goal number one, he said,
Same.
In the state of Texas is to eliminate rape so that no woman, no person will be a victim of rape. Does that seem reasonable? Does that seem like it came out of the brain of a reasonable human being to you?
This is insane. This is insane.
Oh my God.
This is insane. This is insanity. This is honestly, like, if 4-year-olds like ran the government. Like it just, this line of thinking is just so like weird and like so like understanding the world through a very specific, simple lens of like black and white, and there's nothing that deviates from yes. this. Like, oh, rape? I'm going to make it not happen anymore. I'm going to get rid of all the rape in the world. All the men who do rape are going to be in jail.
And if people come here and they're not supposed to come here from the border, I'll build a big wall.
Big and tall.
Taller than my crib.
It's just like...
But I don't have a crib because you aborted me.
But no, I think it's like a ham-fisted, like really dumb, clunky way of seeing the world.
I'm like, we're adults. We like there are complex issues and complex solutions, baby. Like that's what we're doing.
It's like if you wanted to, change the packaging on something because people were consistently like poisoning themselves accidentally, and you were like, no, I'm not going to do anything about that. Like, I'm just going to get rid of poison. Like, obviously, like, poison is bad, so our number one goal should be just eliminating this thing.
Like,
you're gonna eliminate rape? No shit.
Don't you think that hasn't been, like, what or what? And my head is gonna explode.
You're not trying to do that either, asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, feminist activists in Texas are trying to do that way more ardently than you are.
Yes, exactly.
God, what a prick. Also, my sister pointed this out on Twitter earlier. She's like, Greg Abbott has been, like, a high-ranking Texas Republican, at least as high as the lieutenant governor for fucking 20 years.
Wow.
So I'm like, if you were going to do it, come on. Jump, do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The time is now. It's like, I don't remember what comedian he was talking about. I'll proudly stand up next to you and defend it. He's like, well, do it. You can right now.
Yeah.
Go suit up, asshole. But anyway, yeah, this just feels like, oh, yeah. Also, so in 2019, there were like 15,000 reported rapes in Texas and 2,200 people arrested. So that's great. And yeah, the incidents of rape and assault have gone up significantly since Abbott's tenure. So it seems like he's not doing a great job of that so far.
He is doing all of it.
Right.
Just like, I cannot believe it's this like very basic, simple line of thinking. That is not how we fix this. Also, just like the 6-week mark is like, I mean, that's a late period. That's like, if you have an irregular period and I'm like, these fucking morons don't even know what a period is. Oh, you know, they probably think you just bleed out of your asshole. Like, the fuck?
AOC had the correct take, which is, she said, none of this is about supporting life. What this is about is controlling women's bodies and controlling people who are not cisgender men, which is absolutely 100% true.
Absolutely.
And which is ironic, given the arguments that I keep hearing slung around about the fucking comparing this, as you said, to the mask mandate, which is outrageous.
Absolutely bonkers. Like, yeah, the extent to which conservatives will perform mental gymnastics to argue for bodily autonomy against vaccines and in the same breath argue for state-sanctioned control of what a pregnant person does with their body is absolutely batshit bonkers.
Well, in trying to reject like government control, you end up actually exerting your own like more toxic form of control in the name of some kind of principle.
Yeah.
And the whole idea behind our particular strain of democracy is that your personal feelings and opinions about something should not trump my actual experience, right? Like, should not dictate what happens to me or what I do with my body, you know?
Yes.
So it's all very, it's bizarrely hypocritical,
right? Yeah, and so some of the responses I got to my tweet were that, like, you know, the unwanted pregnancies turning to unwanted children. There are plenty of people, families that want children. Like, they could just give it give the baby up for adoption. I was like, then why are there 450,000 children in foster care right now?
Right.
There are that many children in foster care.
I had no idea that the number was that high.
Isn't that insane? And you know what? I also was thinking about this. If we care so much about human life, then why is it controversial to say Black Lives Matter?
Yeah,
you know, right, like, why is it controversial to say that? I'm like,
because it's an attempt at sanctioning a particular kind of control.
Right.
And I think people have had decades to, you know, to work out these arguments. Like, you know, Roe versus Wade was 1972. So they've had like plenty of time to fashion these arguments, mm-hmm. and they're really effective.
Yeah.
For people who, like, if I've talked before on episodes about if you're going to have an argument about something in a reasonable way, you have to define your terms.
Mm-hmm.
If our point of disagreement is murder is, you know, if where we agree is murder is wrong.
Yes.
And the person you're arguing with says, I definitively, categorically see abortion as ending a human life. It's really hard to have a conversation from that point
because right.
you're not seeing eye to eye on that issue.
Right.
Like I do not personally see abortion as murder.
Right.
If you do, you have to do so much work to, you know, either clarify that point or unravel some of the logic around that. And it's really difficult and incredibly emotional. And it's like the arguments on both sides are really well rehearsed and thoroughly sort of hashed out. And I think that's why abortion takes the place that it does in sort of the like religious, cultural, political war,
mm-hmm.
is that, first of all, I think Roe versus Wade was it's like a fragile ruling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ruth
Bader Ginsburg actually noted that in talking about it in later years, like, I wish that it had been like, you know, like talking about wishing it had been a different case, like, mm-hmm. because it's not a very, it rests on your right to privacy, right?
Right.
It's not an ironclad ruling.
Right.
You know?
Right. I completely agree that, like, what happens is we have a difference of, like, a disagreement on terms. The disagreement is when life begins, right? Like what is considered a life? And for, you know, anti-abortion activists, they're saying that, like, life begins at conception, you know, life begins with a fertilized egg. And I really actually appreciated what Hassan said. I don't know if he like said it from his own brain or like got it from somebody else, but like this idea that like if a building was burning down and there were like 20 like fertilized just eggs, you know, in a fridge or whatever, you would put a fertilized egg and a baby,
like a 6-month-old baby,
like living baby, like which would you save?
And
I'm not crazy about these hypotheticals. I think they're stupid.
They're like utilitarian arguments that are interesting. They reveal something about your priorities, your value. They should, right?
Right.
Even if it is a ridiculous kind of extreme.
So like I do agree. Like if you dig your heels in and say, no, those 20 potential lives are more important to me than this, like this actual human life.
Right.
You're a fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
Like that's insane. That is an insane belief. But like, that's what they're arguing for, right?
Yeah.
And I think as I've been thinking about this, I'm like, you know, what do I personally believe? When do I think, you know, human life really begins? And I decided this is my new definition of when life begins. I think life begins when you have the capacity to feel pain.
That's an interesting, that's an interesting line to draw.
And like, that's why I see, like, I can see someone being like, you know, a later pregnancy abortion is just like so nightmarish, the capacity for something to feel pain. Even like scientists, researchers, medical professionals say that like the fetus does not experience pain, does not feel pain.
Right. Like, so Justice Sotomayor wrote in part, Taken together, the act is a breathtaking act of defiance, and this is talking about the act in Texas, right? Mm-hmm. Of the Constitution, of this court's precedents, and of the rights of women seeking abortions throughout Texas. But over 6 weeks after the applicants filed suit to prevent the act from taking effect, a Fifth Circuit panel abruptly stayed all proceedings before the district court. So procedural stuff, procedural stuff, procedural stuff. And then says, let's see. At a minimum, this court should have stayed implementation of the act to allow lower courts to evaluate these issues in the normal course. Instead, the court has rewarded the state's effort to delay federal review of a plainly unconstitutional statute enacted in disregard of the court's precedents through procedural entanglements of the state's own creation. The court should not be so content to ignore its constitutional obligations to protect not only the rights of women, but also to the sanctity of its precedents and of the rule of law. Mm. I dissent. Mm. So, yeah, I think that, like, the naughty, naughty K-N-O-T-T-Y procedural issues notwithstanding, she puts a real emphasis on, like, this is unconstitutional and absolutely defies precedent that we've established in this court as far as abortion goes. Yes. So you're right. This is a real tide change.
Yes. And I think that the what a lot of the, you know, the dissenting justices are saying is, like, this is what they call, like, sort of, this is shadow pocket, right? Like they created, like this court in Texas created so many obstacles for a fair, just proceeding to happen.
Right.
And the fact that they created so many obstacles.
Intentionally. For
this, yes, exactly. So that they could get this passed.
Right.
Is, I think, also, like, this is, not only was the act itself unconstitutional, mm-hmm. but, like, that process that didn't have, like, everything that was supposed to have happened, like, happen.
Democrats are just going to have to be willing to play as fucking dirty as Republicans
do. I think so.
Because, it's reminding me of, like, just the blatant hypocrisy over nominating
Merrick Garland.
Right.
Versus Amy Coney Barrett. It was just,
I mean, honestly, like,
I cannot believe it.
They're willing to do it though. And yeah. I think, like, they're always going to be willing to do it.
Yeah.
It's ruthlessness.
It was, honestly, for me, that was sort of not the last straw, but it was definitely like, oh, like, Democrats are going to continue, like, trying to reach across the aisle yep. and be like, okay, well, that you know, it's fair. Like, let's
we
try
need to
be
like, just as aggressive in the other direction of, like, yep. ensuring and expanding abortion access. Mm-hmm. 90% of counties in the United States don't have an abortion provider. 90%.
Really?
Yeah. Making it effectively out of reach for most people anyway.
Right.
So I feel like the response to this isn't to, like, cower in the corner and be like, please stop taking our rights away. But it's, like, in states that have populations that support this, to, like, push and push and push.
Yeah.
And expand access to abortion and reproductive care.
I wonder what the law is for, like, states that have it to just, like, really expand abortion care and then, like, make trucks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure it's, like, super risky to drive a truck like that through Texas, but, like,
I think,
like, something that would be, like, the vigilante, you know?
Yeah. I think right now, donating to Planned Parenthood of Texas is a fantastic idea because I think that Planned Parenthood has got some kind of a...
They have, like, some
injunction
sort of,
or something.
Yeah. Honestly, it's, like, for 2 weeks.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. But the ACLU is fighting it and, it, you know, I'm always like, come on, ACLU, fix this.
And, like, narrow... I think it's also worth repeating that this is an issue, especially in Texas, that disproportionately affects people of color because almost 70% of abortion services in Texas were provided for women of color.
Wow.
And I think in 2019, Black women already have higher mortality rates, like, during childbirth than white women. And this does not, like, the law in Texas allows, the one that was upheld by the Supreme Court, allows exceptions in the case of a mother's life being threatened, but it's, like, for health reasons, but it's, like, really narrowly defined. And that just seems like a dangerous can of worms to open up, you know?
One thing I pointed out online, and I think we briefly mentioned, but just is the vastness of Texas and how huge Texas is and how incredibly like, difficult it is going to be for someone to get care, the care that they need. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And someone on Facebook said, which is just where you go for all enriching, you know, conversation.
True. Like,
somebody said, you know, why do these people, why do all of these people care? It's only happening in Texas. Like, you know, it's
Lord.
Like, what's the big deal? And to think that this is not going to be, you know.
Oh my God. Well, it's a nationwide ruling.
Right. Exactly. This is a Supreme Court. Like, this is a Supreme Court ruling.
They're ruling on the constitutionality of a near total ban on abortion in a state. So if you don't see how that sets a dangerous precedent, and in fact, this was the goal all along, you know, was this kind of almost total ban. I will say, what I keep seeing, I just want to weigh in on this really quickly. I keep seeing, I don't know why this bothers me exactly, but people saying things like, oh, the Taliban would love this law that Texas just passed, or like, you know, or like, oh, this is like Sharia law in Texas, and talking about Al-Qaeda and all that kind of stuff. I don't really know if I believe that it's helpful to draw that distinction. Maybe just because it feels like it's like further stigmatizing Islam in a way that's like not representative of like all people who practice Islam. Like, I don't know what it is about the comparison with like Islamic quote extremism unquote just doesn't sit well with me. Do you share that? I don't know why it bothers me.
I think to me, and I wonder if Muslim people feel the same way. It's like, I don't consider the Westboro Baptist Church a Christian church. Like, I think it's just so far removed from like the ideology. And I wonder if, like, you know, people who, you know, practice Islam are like Islam extremists, like the Taliban have nothing to do with me or my life.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Or my religion or my faith.
Yeah.
And they're just so completely divorced from the actual like religion that it like besmirches the like the actual principles and like the beauty of the religion, like the good parts of it, you know what
right.
I mean? Whereas like I would not call the Westboro Baptist Church, I don't, they're a hate group.
Right.
Know?
I mean, right. And I'm looking now at this Washington Post article. I'm using up one of my allowed Washington Post articles on this. Thank you very much. before they bring the hammer down. But there's this article about how experts in the field of Sharia and Islamic law are like weighing in on those kind of comparisons because they're really common. Apparently, unfortunately, my boy Stephen King is one of the people who tweeted like, you know, the Taliban would love Texas' new abortion law. Mm. And there's this Muslim scholar that they interview. Apparently, under Islamic law, the majority of medieval Muslim scholars allowed women to terminate a pregnancy before 120 days. And this guy, Abed Awad, who is a professor at Rutgers Law School, said scholars in the medieval period looked at the theological conception as the start of life as opposed to a scientific conception as the start of life. Mm. So there's an idea that a fetus is not ensouled at conception, which I think is, I love that word ensouled. But anyway, so even that is like not necessarily accurate, and
it's extreme for Sharia law,
right? And this right, exactly. And it says while opinions vary over when a pregnancy can be terminated, there is no complete ban on a woman's right to end pregnancy under Islamic law. And apparently, you know, the Awad says this is the kind of information that marginalizes and dehumanizes Muslim Americans. And sort of like continues to other them, you know.
Right.
And Awad says the Texas law constitutes a religious violation of the First Amendment in that it subjects this, quote, moral position of the Christian right and the anti-abortion movement to other communities who don't subscribe to those beliefs.
Right.
So I guess conflating those two things, like you can say like this is, I think you could say this is an exercise in like Christian fundamentalist extremism if it feels like that to you. But even then, the extent to which this is even like rooted in real Christian thought is not clear to me.
Exactly. Well, and I think that that's what's so frustrating and like angering about all of this is that it's fine to have those beliefs. It really is. If you believe that life begins right at conception, and that is your belief. Right. That's fine. Fuck. I don't agree. You know, like, that's a philosophical discussion.
Right.
But to legislate it and to say that, like, federally governed, the government should decide right. when life begins.
Yep.
Is, crazy.
You know, let me say this too. I'm trying to think of a comparison, and I know this probably sounds a little bit edgy, but, like, let me talk about what I see as the distinction between my own, like, personal moral code and what I would prefer to see in the world versus, like, an actual law. Because when we make different kinds of claims, we make descriptive claims and normative claims. Mm-hmm. If you make a descriptive claim, you are describing the world as it actually is, right? Right. Like, women of color get more, need more access to, traditionally, access abortion services more often than white women in Texas. That's a descriptive claim, right? That's how it is.
Right.
The normative claim you'd make is what ought we do about that? Is there something we need to do about that? Where is the problem there? You'll have to get somebody to agree that there's a problem there. And then if there is, how do we act on it? What do we decide to do, right? So I try to avoid making normative claims about things that don't, like, particularly concern me. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But as a descriptive claim, there are lots of places in this country where there are, like, what they call Romeo and Juliet laws, mm-hmm. where, like, if, like, with parental consent, I think sometimes minors, like, people who are under the age of 18, can get married, it's like legal for them to have relationships with the consent of their parents. Mm-hmm. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I can't really even articulate why. it just bothers me. It violates, like, my personal sense of what is right, right? And that's my own personal belief. I would never, though, push to legislate anything different, because I feel like that's not really, that's not what I would do, but that's not really any of my business. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I know that, like, with an issue like life, you know, or what you see as being life, with an issue like pregnancy, I see how that gets really personal. But, you know, like, my sister brought up with us today also, like, the unborn are, like, a convenient sort of category to advocate for politically, because, like, they've never done anything wrong. They can't, they can't speak or advocate for themselves.
Right.
You don't have to, like, it's not a voting base that you need to appeal to.
Right.
You're not going to get any dissenting, not like you would if you spoke on behalf of, you know, immigrants or undocumented mm-hmm. people or poor mm-hmm. people or anything else. So that makes it, like, a tricky issue in and of itself. But just in general, you know, I say we shouldn't legislate morality, but we legislate morality all the time. That's what laws against murder are, right? That's legislating morality.
Right.
That's what the law is. So fundamentally, that's what it is, right? But it's not just based in pure reason. That's bullshit. Like, it is based in moral codes and moral systems. But unless you'd have to feel so fucking confident that what you are advocating for, you know, prohibiting does in fact constitute a harm to somebody.
Yeah.
And I just don't see the path that people are getting to arrive at that point, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. But, like, if you can justify, if you believe in your heart of hearts that life, that's a human life, that is, like, a soul that that just, you know, bursts into being at conception, then it's murder, you know?
Right. And you can't, how do you talk somebody out of that? That's what I'm saying. That's where you reach the impasse. Like, in rhetoric, you have to get to stasis. Like, you have to get to a point where you can identify the point of disagreement,
right?
Or the difference in definition or something.
Right.
And as long as it you know, is that way, at least you can pinpoint the point of disagreement, and you can say, like, I see that you are defining this as murder. Let me see if I can challenge you on that definition.
Yeah.
Like, let's see if we can come to see that differently. But if it's not based in reason, if it's based in emotion or religious principle, mm-hmm. you can't talk somebody out of religious faith. You cannot. Like, you can try. You can maybe talk them out of, like, theologically out of a particular perspective, but then you'd have to have that ethos with them, right?
Right.
Like, I'm the Pope, and I'm telling you abortion's okay.
Yeah.
You know? So Sorry, Georgie is bringing a cactus to me repeatedly. It's really, it's really cute.
Yeah, how do you refuse a cactus?
Thanks, BarkBox. Sponsor the pod. Or don't. We're fine without you.
Oh, no.
I guess that's not how we get sponsored.
Oh, no.
Oh, sorry. There's a fight over the cactus. A little play-by-play for you. All right. Are you ready to move on to our segment?
Segment.
It's time for what turned out to be, based on a Patreon poll. I was astounded by this.
This is like my favorite segment.
It's our most popular segment, according to Patreon, like far and away. Like it was a runaway winner. And we do nothing but deliver for people who love the pod. That was dramatic. Can we hear that?
Yep.
We are going to. So we're going to deliver right now. We're going to play the fucking whisper game. Let's go. So the Whisper Game, which is like some kind of a bastardization of like Jimmy Fallon or something, is one of us wears headphones. The other one whispers something. You'll be able to hear it, dear listener. But I have headphones on that are blasting white noise into my ear holes. So I'm going to take my best guess at what Ms. Lambert is saying, and then we'll switch.
Yeah, Wyatt's going to try to like read my lips.
Read my lips. No new taxes. You're probably too young for that, huh? This is George H.W. Bush. He lied, by the way. He raised taxes, and then Bill Clinton beat him in the 1992 presidential election. Okay, ready?
I just farted.
Okay.
Okay, I'm playing it. It's loud. Can you hear me?
Okay, I've got the affirmative that Wyatt cannot hear me. Okay, okay, I'm going to pull the microphone up here.
When do the cows come home? When do the cows come home?
When do the...
When do the cows come home?
Good job!
Yeah!
You can't beat me!
Jesus! Screaming. Okay.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Can you hear me?
One more time.
I got mad.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Yes.
Good job, buddy.
Throw me something harder. Harder.
Okay, don't look away because that's what I'm going to do.
I'll take a Big Mac and a soda pop.
You think I can hear it? You're telling me to look away.
Yeah. Oh,
I see.
Okay. Because I want to say it louder in the microphone.
Okay.
I'll take a Big Mac and a soda pop.
I'm going... I'm telling my mom.
I'll take a Big Mac.
I'm simply mad.
I'll take a Big Mac and a soda pop.
I point to your mom.
What was that one?
One more time.
Okay. Okay.
I'll take a Big Mac and a soda pop.
One more time.
I'll take a Big Mac. Take a Big Mac.
I sent PayPal.
And a soda pop.
I know your mom. What was it? What was it?
I'll take a Big Mac and a soda pop.
Okay, I like that. Okay.
I point to your mom.
I was like, I think this says more about me than anything
else. Okay, the next one is
character assassination.
Carriage is not salty. I know that's not a thing anybody says. That can't be it.
Character assassination.
Carriage is... carrots and celery.
Character assassination.
Terrorism is not salty. What were you saying?
Character assassination.
Oh, but that's a really good one.
Okay. Carrots are not salty. Okay.
It's gonna be a no for me, dog. It's gonna be a no from me, dog.
You look sexy when you're leaning in to do that. Yeah.
It's gonna be a no for me, dog.
It's gonna get over better.
It's gonna be a no from me, dog.
One more time.
It's gonna be a no from me.
Do you dog. Like? Do you know? Again.
It's gonna be a no for me, dog.
Come to my room.
It's gonna be a no for me, dog.
It's gonna be over soon.
What was it?
It's gonna be a no from me, dog. Your facial expressions, too, are really changing the game. Okay, is there more?
That's it.
Incredible. Amazing.
That was so good.
That was perfect. Okay, okay. Your turn. I think you're going to find this to be very effective.
Okay.
Was I just screaming at
you? Yes, it's really, really funny.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's really effective. No.
Yeah, you just answered.
Okay, I'm turning it up even louder.
It is effective, right? Okay, she can't hear me. Can you hear me?
Whoa.
It's good, right? Okay, good. She can't hear me at all. Okay, ready, y'all?
Holy shit.
Smash Mouth. The first one is Smash Mouth. Smash Mouth.
Smash Mouth.
Yes! Good job! You actually vindicated yourself after... Never mind. Okay. I love Saag Paneer. I'm going to say I love Saag Paneer. I love Saag Paneer.
I love Saag Beer.
You know that. You know that's not it. I love Saag Paneer.
I love South Beer. Saag Beer. Saag Beer.
I love Saag Paneer.
I love Saag Paneer.
Yes, you're doing great. Okay, this next one is I made a solemn vow. I made a solemn vow.
I bet the dog's dowry. I bet.
I made a solemn vow.
I bet your solemn vow. I bet your solemn vow.
You're close.
I bet you.
I made a solemn vow.
I made a solemn vow.
Good job. You're doing really good. Okay, this next one is Chic C'est la vie. Chic C'est la vie. C'est la vie.
She did it in the elevator.
Chic C'est la vie.
She salivated.
She's so close. You're so close. Chic C'est la vie.
She's loving it. One more.
You're so close. Chic C'est la vie.
She salivate.
She celibate.
Celibate? She celibate? She's celibate. She's celibate.
One more. Chic C'est la vie.
She's 11. I want to get it one more time. Okay. One more time.
Chic C'est la vie.
She's 11. What is it? What is it?
You were so close. Chic C'est la vie.
Oh, good job.
I guess it being a different language is a little challenging.
I love it. Okay, is there more?
Yeah. Okay. One more. Okay, this last one is I did it all for the nookie. I'm not going to make this easy on her. I did it all for the nookie.
I took all the green. I took all the dream.
I did it all for the nookie.
I did it all for the green. I did it all for the green. I did it all for the dream.
I did it all for the nookie.
I did it all for the green.
No!
The dream. I did it all for the dream.
For the nookie.
I did it all for the grieve.
You are obsessed. I did it all for the nookie.
I didn't offer. I didn't offer greed.
She's like a dog with a bone with this green thing. I did it all for the nookie. Nookie.
Aloney. Loaded. I did it all for the green.
You're like, why isn't this working?
Okay, one more.
I did it all for the nookie.
I did it all. I did it nookie. All for the greed.
No!
Stop. I want to get it. Creed.
I did it all for the nookie.
For the nookie!
Yes!
Nicely done. You are so fixated on green and greed. It was so funny. Okay, I see why y'all like that one. It's good.
Is that it?
Oh, shit.
No.
Oh, my God. We weren't recording.
Yes, we were.
Yes, we were. Sorry.
Okay, we all done?
We're all done. Ugh. What did you think about the white noise?
So, white noise is so much better than,
so much
like,
better than
Dolly
having
Parton.
Blasting in your ears, right?
I love like, Dolly Parton, but she was, like, in my, like, into my, like, hypothalamus.
I think it's better, and I don't have a headache.
Hippocampus and hypothalamus.
Hippocratic. By the way, did you see Georgie the whole time we were doing that? She was being... This number, her lip was like pulled
she
up.
She loves to like lick through the cage at she nothing.
Looked, like, did you ever see that in Living Color? There's a skit that Jim Carrey did called Fire Marshal Bill. Have you ever seen it?
Mm-mm.
She looks like that. I'll show you.
Is it like this one?
Yes. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
How do you know?
I don't know.
It's this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
You know, upon looking... Never mind. Okay, I think he's, like... It looks like he's supposed to be, like, a burn victim, which is, like, kind of not funny. Anyway.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Do you want to talk about our obsession?
Yes!
What's your first obsession?
My first obsession is,
That's not an obsession.
Well, it's makeup.
Oh, you're into makeup right now.
I'm just having a makeup moment, you know? I go through phases where, like, I'm really into makeup or I just don't wear it at all. And, like, right now, I'm really excited about experimenting.
Show the Patreon viewers your look right
now. Okay, look at my look.
Listeners,
trying
you...
trying to do more of a strong brow.
It's a strong brow, listeners.
Yeah.
And a little bit of a...
I've never
foundation
done...
system repair.
What? No, I'm...
Oh, okay.
What are you... You don't even... Okay.
No, you're right. I don't know.
I've never done a strong brow before, but I've been very inspired. But I feel like every time I do it, I just... All I can see is this, these, like, two really thick caterpillars, you know? And it's like...
Then the joke's on you, because caterpillars are really
caterpillars
cool.
are in.
Yes, they're in.
Oh, I just love
and they're
that
cool.
you're
experimenting.
Yeah, I'm just trying different things. I've been doing the same thing for, like... You know, 15 years.
Have you looked at makeup tutorials on YouTube?
So this all started, I was like, you know, I've never done, I still don't get contour. I don't know how any of it works. And I, rather than like trying to, well, I've tried to learn a couple times, but it's just more like, you know, when you see like 15-year-olds like, just like killing it, like so much better than you, it's, the impulse is to just like give up on everything, like throw away your makeup, you know? but I decided to try it.
I'm glad
that's
you did.
That's what we're doing now. We're trying.
And you are a very skilled, you just have a good aesthetic. You're
thank
just
you,
skilled with everything you attempt aesthetically.
That is very sweet. Oh yeah. So this started by, I was looking for an app. I was like, what would I look like with like, if someone were to do my makeup
and you
like
loved
this?
It.
I loved the strong brow.
Also, you loved the blue hair.
I want blue hair now.
I think we should do it, guys. Press 1 in the chat if you think that maybe we should do it. I've been watching too much.
You've been watching a lot of Twitch.
My first obsession, thanks for asking, is this book I just started reading called The State Must Provide. And the subtitle is Why America's Colleges Have Always Been Unequal and How to Set Them Right. And it's by Adam Harris, who is a staff writer for The Atlantic Monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in this book because my dissertation research was all about education access and, you know, students like students who represent racial minorities and students who live in poverty and students who traditionally don't have equal access to education are the ones who are the easiest prey for-profit colleges and universities, mm-hmm. which were the focus of my dissertation study. But so this is a book that sort of critiques the America's colleges and universities insofar as they have never really given Black people a fair chance to succeed. That, you know, schools that have few Black students are more lavishly funded. Schools that are like, you know, like HBCUs and other schools, like not just historically Black colleges and universities, but also like, you know, universities that are in impoverished areas or tend to attract more Black students just flat out don't get as much funding as majority white institutions or primarily white institutions, as they call them, PWIs.
Mm.
And he's going through sort of the history right now back to 1852 or 1862, rather, which is when the Morrill Act established land-grant colleges and universities. And is talking about the founding of Berea College, which was the first truly integrated institution of higher education in the country, and Oberlin, which also in Ohio, which also, you know, theoretically or I guess in practice too, allowed black people to attend. But anyway, it's just interesting. I think it's so easy to ignore questions of educational access when there aren't like HBCUs around us. There aren't like primarily black institutions of higher ed around us, but they're like not in the best shape. So, right. Yeah, it's really interesting so far. So I'll give updates as I continue reading that.
Please. I'm very excited.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing.
You are so welcome. And what's your second obsession?
My second obsession is I'm kind of obsessed with just, like, fixing stuff around the house.
Yeah, you're on a kick.
Yeah. I just woke up early one day, and I was like, we need this done, we need this done, and then we need this done.
And you went through the inspection report, which I thought was a good idea.
Yes. And, like, calling people and getting shit done. I'm just, like, very into getting shit done.
Yes.
That's just the mode I'm in right now.
I admire you for that. Thanks. I can tell you want to do it right now. Yes. You want to get stuff done right now.
I'm itching.
I know, even though it's becoming harder actually to even like schedule recording the podcast, we've been so busy, but yes. It's still a welcome task that like lets me do a lot of reflection that I don't get to do otherwise.
I think so too. And I feel like, you know, we hang out like 24/7, but it's like we're always in the middle of doing something.
Yeah.
And like the podcast really gives us a chance to like actually like talk.
Yeah. You know? Like look at each other and
have
talk.
Have time. Yeah. That's nice. What's your second obsession?
It's actually my second obsession is YouTube videos of lo-fi chill study beats. And they always have like sort of a moody looking drawing of like Homer Simpson or like SpongeBob. Like it's just very, and the words are like all spaced out kind of funny. It'll be like vibes or like chill. And let me tell you, they're the fucking best. They're the best. It's like Xanax, audio Xanax. And there is a less than zero chance that I have already talked about this, and I love it so much, I just am bringing it up again. But we're very into creating, like, vibe zones in the house.
Yes.
Downstairs will be a particular lo-fi, chill vibes, right? And then upstairs will be, like, jazz in the background, which is another great... That's a Spotify playlist, I think.
Yes, I'm obsessed with that
one. So get in on that.
Yeah.
Everybody. I'm sure this is another one of those things I'm, like, 10 years behind on.
What, lo-fi? Yeah. Like... No.
Yes.
I think people go into lo-fi when they need it most.
I like that. It's just a respite from, you know, a place, a safe space, a haven.
Absolutely. My last obsession is mini golf.
I forgot we even did that. That was so much fun.
I've never really done mini golf before. I did it once. There's this place in the mall that has like glow in the dark mini golf, but it was really bad.
Indoor
was,
mini golf is not the same.
And I don't have a sense of smell, you know, but it felt like it smelled weird. And
you gotta be outside.
Like, and there wasn't any.
Was it all just like flat?
It was just some ramps and things like that. No. There were no obstacles or anything like this. But this place, they had there was like a bridge and rocks and water.
Wouldn't an amazing career be like mini golf course design?
Oh my God, that's a dream job I didn't know that I had.
And I really want us to visit like every mini golf course that we can.
You kept saying that. I thought that was so cool. You were like, I want to go to every mini golf course in America.
And maybe some in... other places. Yeah.
We should see if there's one in Boise.
I want it. It's a really good idea. Okay, are we ready to move on to our poems?
What, did you have one more obsession?
Oh, yeah. I guess my last obsession was that lobster that I got for the dog.
Oh, yeah.
It's a battery-operated toy for dogs that it's like a lobster with what I assume is a realistic, like, it flops around.
Yeah.
And the dogs lost their minds, of course, and destroyed them, one of them promptly. So I ordered another one, which cost $14, and they destroyed it. But then the little, like, actual battery-operated wiggling thing survived. So Mary has just been, like, transplanting it into other
different toys.
It's been really fun.
I think when I saw it, it looked like it was for cats.
I think it is for cats.
Yeah, because cats...
maybe cats won't destroy it quite as quickly.
I think it's probably less of a health hazard, but monitor them, you know?
Right. Well, sorry. You know, fuck me. I killed our dogs almost. Okay, do you want to read your poem?
Yes.
Please, you read yours first. I'm begging you.
This is a... I love that you're Googling... mini golf in Boise right now.
Yeah, sorry.
Also, if you're in Boise or around the area,
come say hi.
Come hang out. I'm performing at Boise Pride.
I would love that.
we're performing at Boise Pride.
Yep. I'm going to be slapping the bass, as y'all know. And I'm getting a little nervous.
We have 5 hours of rehearsal.
We're going to be just fine.
Okay, so this is a poem by Joshua Bennett from the book The Sobbing School. This is a National Poetry Series winner that was selected by Eugene Gloria. And I've had this book for many years, and I never finished it. And I was like, I really want to read something of Joshua Bennett's. He was a poet doing the slam scene around the same time I was. And I remember seeing him live and, you know, I mean, very peripherally competing at the same time as him and just being really in awe of what an incredible performer he is. But it's just so beautiful to see a performance poet, someone that does spoken word and slam, to create a like such a gorgeous book and to really see it in text.
Right. Oh, I'm so excited to hear this.
So this is a poem called Love Poem Ending with Typewriters.
You know, kind of like you find lo-fi when you need it. You found Joshua Bennett's book when you needed it.
Exactly.
You
know,
you revisited it when you needed to.
Yes. So this is called Love Poem Ending with Typewriters. And maybe no one's happy, I think to myself, usually during the plane ride home or as I read dead French philosophers on the couch. Only a child's hideaway from my girlfriend who... for real, is a platonic ideal in her own right. All any reasonable citizen of desire might dare to imagine in these times of breakup over text message and earnest tweets left unanswered for days. We fit like the grooves on a bullet. We both love Rilke and want children and think furniture design is pretty important. 3 months into our tour of the human condition, I dropped half my rent on a Corinthian leather sofa because it sounded cool. And she didn't eat anything with preservatives in it. So I figured, no biggie. This is what all functioning adults do. They lie expensively. They lie awake. They lie on their side. Eyes ajar, lover dreaming of cormorants right next to them, counting the minutes until even this bows. Counting the minutes until even this bows to the sovereignty of rot. Beloved, if I came from anything unworthy of shame, I would say so. I wouldn't brood across the country this way. If I knew how to stop calling your presence pity, my therapist's couch would grow cold as a slaughterhouse. And is that what you want? To break such a flawless routine? To stop screaming at typewriters, expecting rain?
God, that's good.
Oh, I just love him.
I love that she said something about like bows to the, with that line.
Yeah,
about
bows like to the sovereignty of rock.
Oh my God, that's so good. And I like my therapist's couch would grow cold. And all the plays on lie.
Oh my God, they lie expensively.
They lie, And I love dreaming of cormorant, anything with the word cormorant. It's one of my favorite words.
Just the most beautiful word.
Is it charging?
Oh no. I really do think like that, that I never considered my belief of like what adults do to be like, yeah, they lie expensively. Like just the times in my life where I've been like, I'm old, I'm mature. It's like, no, I've been massively in debt.
You know, yeah.
Like really trying to
hold it together.
Posture.
As
if something weren't the truth. And like, this is, you know, one of the first times in my life where I've really been able to like express humility with like, who I am, what I am, and what I have to offer, you know?
Like the Corinthian leather sofa.
Yes.
That's... We don't need to buy Corinthian leather sofas anymore.
No, my love.
Thank you for sharing that beautiful poem.
Thank you for listening. I cannot wait. What you got?
I'm reading a poem that I just love that I read by your favorite Nicole Seeley.
Love her.
That you read a poem of hers last week.
Yes.
Or last episode. So here we are. This is a short one, but it's called Medical History. I've been pregnant. I've had sex with a man who's had sex with men. I can't sleep. My mother has, my mother's mothers had asthma. My father had a stroke. My father's mother has high blood pressure. Both grandfathers died from diabetes. I drink, I don't smoke. Xanax for flying. Propranolol for anxiety. My eyes are bad. I'm spooked by wind. Cousin Lily died from an aneurysm. Aunt Hilda, a heart attack. Uncle Ken, wise as he was hit by a car, as if to disprove whatever theory toward which I write. And I understand the stars in the sky are already dead.
Wow. Oh, shit.
Isn't that so fucking
cool? What's the title of it?
Medical history.
God, that's so good.
I like her. Like, there's something really, like, there's a sort of, like, rhythm to that poem that I really like. This sort of minimalism, but it's got a really, like, it just sounds good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, reading it out loud, it just rolls off the tongue.
Oh, it's stark.
Yeah,
it's
stark.
And sparse, and, oh, it's just so pretty. I just also love turning really traditional, like, forms and things, like, on its head.
Yes, you know? Me too. And, like, yes.
The idea that, like, oh, that we're seeing stars light even before.
Yes. Yeah, me too.
Before they're dead.
It reminds me of, there's this Langston Hughes poem called Theme from English B, I think. And it takes this, like, very generic, like, they used to have students in English classes write what they called themes. They were, like, these really formulaic responses. And this, it's a poem, like, sort of riffing on like, this really sort of, you know, quotidian, is that the word I'm looking for? Yeah, like, quotidian kind of boring genre and, like, really subverting it. I think it's so interesting.
I couldn't agree more.
Quotidian. Of or occurring every day, or nearly every day. Ordinary or everyday, mundane.
Quotidian.
Boom!
Why, it just half-dabbed.
Yeah, those are.
I just feel like I needed to narrate.
Thank you for that. Also, Wahoo's Family Fun Zone in Boise.
Yes.
Has Caverns Mill and Hillbilly Hollow. Two elaborately themed 18-hole mini golf courses. Caverns Mill recently underwent a $500,000 transformation.
Oh my God.
With 18 new and challenging fun holes, a double waterfall feature, and a fire shooting tiki god.
Stop.
So, are we going to Wahoo's Fun Zone? Yeah, does a bear shit in the woods? So, we'll see y'all on the course.
Bye, y'all.
Love ya.